I don't know if it will sound weird, because we're inside for the first time.
Yeah.
Because it's so windy that you would have heard absolutely nothing.
And also, we have cleaned the cabin, so you can see the floor.
Yeah.
Which means that you can sit in here.
We'll get kicked out of the hoarders group if you can see the floor.
No, it's all still there. It's all just in bags. Actually, it isn't all still there. We did throw away two bin bags full.
And we did say last week the wind was the enemy.
Yes, wind. There you go.
Wind is very much the enemy.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about, well, I guess the theme is it doesn't have to be perfect. Does it spark anything?
Well, when we were talking about this as a topic, what immediately sprung to mind was something that happens, it's a discussion that takes place a lot amongst forest school leaders, about kind of planning and when things don't go as you expect. Uh-huh. And so in your brain you're like, oh, I forgot that resource, or but I was going to do that because something a kid said last week made me think that we should do this thing, and then I've balls this up in some way, which means that that can't happen, or the weather has suddenly turned, and so therefore what I planned or hoped to happen wasn't going to happen. And how those moments where you might think you're failing a little bit, often the most amazing spontaneous stuff happens. So
that you might miss if you're focused on your plan. That's often the thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, completely. And yeah, and the weather being a great example, that, you know, you suddenly realise, okay, I can't do this because it's windy. And then, like on Monday, it was so windy, and like the kids were absolutely fine, weren't they? They were really red faces, no hats, and we were kind of going, oh, I was kind of going, do you want your hat on? I am really feeling quite wind battered now. They're like, no, it's fine. I was like, oh, we've got some streamer stuff in the cabin.
I think the thing is,
make streamers and go for it.
If you can get into the mindset that the children will show you what they need at any time, they are showing you. And as long as you can tune into that, the session will always be close to perfect because it's what they needed.
Mm.
And they, you know, and that's, it's almost like, well, what would your perfect meal be? It would be, you describe it exactly to someone and they make it.
Mm.
And with the kids, well, they're not going to describe like, my perfect session, I'd really like today if we could have this. But you watch them and you go, oh, okay, they want to run. Okay, right, well, we're going to run that, you know. The difficulty, I think, is if you're looking at development over a longer term, I think that's where you, maybe it's, I'm going to use the word compromise, because if you're looking at development over a long term with a group, you might have to compromise an immediate need for a longer term need. Like an immediate, like, I desperately want to run around and see all this new stuff, and you go, okay, but for like safety, I need everyone to stay here and talk that through. And so you're going, well, I can't meet all of your needs all the time. And I think that's where some people get a bit unstuck, is trying to.
I've noticed that. So thinking about what a group as well need rather than want is a very different thing.
Yes,
it's kind of straying off the topic of it doesn't have to be perfect in a way.
Well, no, but I think it does, because I think it's that thing of perfect forest school, if you go by the six, you know, majobbies, is, you know, there's lots of emphasis on child-led.
Yes.
But child-led does not mean the same as do what you want.
Exactly. And also, if you, it doesn't mean necessarily, which is something I've been thinking about recently, so sort of observing and asking the children what they want to do, or thinking, oh, they're really interested in this. Actually, like you're kind of saying, a longer-term need might be, actually, no, they like I was talking about that group who are wanting and would tell you they just wanted to free play for the entire session, but actually, because there were so many sort of factions and issues there, what they needed, although they would never tell you that they needed it, was a bit more structure at the beginning, followed by a very supportive bursts of free play, in my opinion,
for that
group at first, to kind of support them. And they would never turn around and tell you that, and from watching them you might think, oh yeah, you know, that's what they need, so I'll just like let them, I'll just give them
that. I think people look at social emotional needs in a different way than possibly, like, if you looked at them in the same way as, like, tool development needs. Mm-hmm. So if you said, like, okay, child X wants to cut firewood. You know, we've got kids in almost every group that they would cut firewood till the end of the, you know, session. But if you've got a kid that can't quite swing an axe, you go, okay, what scaffolding can I put in? Oh, maybe I hold the axe and you hit it with a hammer. Or you go, oh, maybe, okay, in some kids, because they haven't got the physical strength, we take turns and we go like that. And you go, well, I've put in a system. What you wanted to do was cut firewood. And you go, right, I've put in a system that means that eventually... Yeah. This is getting you towards that. So in terms of free playing,
exactly the same.
People go, oh, I can't step in. I mustn't ever ever impact their play. And you go, right, but if they're going to hurt themselves, whether that's swinging an axe into their own leg or whether that is they're going to do some emotional damage to themselves or others, you go, right, well, I'm going to... Maybe what you need now is a little bit of scaffolding. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, we're not going to be the best friends today, or this might feel uncomfortable for a little while. But eventually they'll chop wood, and eventually you know, you're hopefully getting them to a point where you go, right, now you can go and do whatever.
And I think that is a challenge as a forest school leader, where you're kind of imagining, as you say, a perfect session, and it's like, how would the kids describe a perfect session, and how would you describe a perfect session? And also, it's not even a session, is it? It's a longer term thing. So how would you describe a perfect long course of work with a particular group? So one session within that might, for the children or for you, you might describe that as really a bit and then, but actually in the longer course of things, you needed that session that felt a bit rubbish.
It's having that longer term view, isn't it, rather than looking at, like, inside my 2 hour slot, it must be fun, happy, smiley games the whole time, because that means perfect, because all the children were happy the whole time.
Yeah.
And a bit like we've always said that, like, play isn't always happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, play is stressful, and play is this, and actually learning can be stressful and can be frustrating. And I think when I think of the, going back to the original, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, the thing that jumps into my head is how on the bigger Facebook groups for Forest School, because the social media forces you into brevity of, you want to get your point across really quickly. You don't write, like, hi guys, I've got a group and there's this many children and then this age, and they do it. People just write, oh, I want to do Vikings, how do I do Vikings? And you get this inevitable shitstorm of, like, oh, you're telling them what to do, it's not forest school, it's not all that. Which, okay, it might not be. I do see the case for people saying, like, feeling like they've got to defend it and constantly you know, stand up for, these are the six, and it can't be that. But sometimes it might, if that person had the chance to explain, it might have been, but, you know, like I say, looking really long term, I know they're going to get loads out of this, and a couple of them are interested, but maybe I want to do, but you don't, you know, no one writes that, and no one asks that, no one says like, oh, is this a long term plan for your group?
And actually, one of the principals does mention linking to other learning, which people often forget, because they focus on the child led side. So if kids are learning about that at school, and are interested, and have mentioned it, and are, and want to link it to their forest school, then that's brilliant, that's even better, isn't it? Yeah, I think it, a lot of it comes down to kind of trust, doesn't it? It's like trusting, trusting the kids, like you've said, that they will show you what they need, and trusting yourself as a practitioner that just moment by moment, you're probably going to do the right thing, and you're going to give the kids a great experience, even if in your eyes, as long as you're reflective, then you can, if
you might get it wrong, it's okay.
And if you can let go and have that trust in yourself, which is really hard, I think, because it is such a, you know, it's a role that we step into because we really care. It's not greatly paid, because we are naturally reflective, and we're on a continual learning journey ourselves, and we accept that. But with that sometimes comes quite a lot of self-doubt, I think, and over-analysing.
We're kind of programmed to look at negatives, aren't we, as a species? It's beneficial.
So being able to trust that actually whatever a session might throw at you, it's going to be all right, and you're going to do the right thing, and you've got your training. And the more experienced you are, the easier that is. Like, I'm finding recently, not that I've got years and years of experience, but even as you notice sort of things that remind you of things that have happened previously, like, oh yeah, something like this has happened before, I remember in my memory what I did with this, and the longer you're at it, the easier it becomes to become spontaneous and adaptable.
Your library's just bigger, isn't it? Your library of experiences is bigger. I was thinking as well, there's like that thing that social media does to everyone, where particularly, I think if you're newer, you might be more susceptible to it than someone who's been in the game a really long, and that's not by no means us, but like people who are, you know, is you look at someone's Facebook page or their Instagram account and you go, happy children in the mud, happy children whittling, maybe some happy birthday parties, and you go, you know, you have to go, yeah, but I bet there was a kid that like kicked off because their hands were muddy and they cried, but you don't put, you know, I think if we were talking to other practitioners, you might be more honest. If there was a place to share things and go like, oh look, this child had a really difficult experience and like, you know, all doing that. But because our businesses also have to face parents or we've all got professional relationships and it's very scary. And I don't know that anybody ever would put stuff up and go, you know, I'm not sure I did the right thing today.
Yeah, yeah, completely. I know. And also when somebody posts a question or a query or, you know, a sort of moment of, oh, I'm not really sure what I'm doing, the way that people jump in with such certainty sometimes really freaks me out. It's like, well, of course it's this. And you're like, is it? I wouldn't have necessarily said, of course it's that. And maybe I'm wrong and maybe I am not, you know.
And I think that ignores a big... So the big part of... The FSA definitions is teaching holistically, isn't it? And so I've been listening this morning to How Children Learn, and it's saying that all a lot of what you might call hard science is focused on, because that's the way that most sciences work, is extracting all irrelevant data.
Right.
You know, so if it's like learning to read, all everything that isn't text on a page and the child either reading that thing or saying it out loud is kind of ignored. But that isn't how children learn in the world. They go, right, I'm going to throw shit at this. I'm taking in so much information and 90% of it is irrelevant to reading. But me reading this book, oh, I'm looking at a picture. Oh, I remember pictures. Or this is making me feel happy. Oh, happiness feels like this. And there's so much data going on that again, it's a bit like I was saying, you can't say what a group needs in a Facebook post. Or even, I don't think you or I could describe an experience to each other and fully get across what we felt a child needed, or even what we needed in that thing, because there's so much going on. Yeah. But like you say, people sometimes are very, well, this is my guideline on this, and I'm very hardline, and this is the principle I believe.
Yeah.
And you know, and no exceptions. Nothing can be changed from this. And I think actually, if you look at people who are possibly the most reflective practitioners, or the people who have, I guess, the most like open about what they do, are always just going like, oh right, well, the context might be different. This is what I might have done in the past, or can you tell me a bit more about this? And you just try and build up a bigger picture, don't you? I think there's a lot of people who are very binary about what forest school is, isn't, and are just like, it's not, and therefore it's awful. Or, you know, it's not exactly my definition of this, and therefore it's awful. And that goes for a lot. That's not just a forest school thing, is it? That's the same with, like, I mean, we've both been reading the Nonviolent Communication, and it's talking about how all of our language is built up around judgment, and that you can't see someone talk to their own child in a supermarket without, in your own head, analysing whether you think that's good, what you would have done, whether you think they've said the right, you know, all that stuff. And you go, I don't know you. I don't know your life.
Yeah,
you just got to, you know.
Yeah, I wonder whether, as well, with forest school, it's in a way so personal and relevant to not only the group but the leader. And I wonder whether being able to observe other people's sessions, almost like a fly on the wall, can you imagine if you could, without being a member of the group, just watch almost on telly just loads and loads of different forest school sessions and different forest school leaders. How reassuring and amazing that would make you it would make you feel completely like it doesn't have to be perfect, because you watch so many different people's ways of doing things, and we don't really get that luxury. Like, we've discussed it, haven't we, in local groups when we've seen people face to face on camps about the possibility of going to observe.
Like peer mentoring and stuff.
And as we said before, you and I are lucky in that we have one another to kind of bounce ideas between.
Tell each other when we're shit.
Tell each other when we're like, oh, I would have done that a bit differently. Why did you do that? But having that wider network of physically going to watch other people, I think for those moments where you are thinking, oh God, you know, how am I going to handle this situation? Or,
and I think that would be beneficial, because lots of people that I've talked to seem to stop their CPD once they get their level 3 certificate.
Yeah.
It's like, bang, I'm level... Oh, sorry, that was probably... I'm level 3 qualified. There is no more I need to learn about the subject.
Do you reckon there are people who do that?
I think there are people who don't maybe...
There's probably people who don't have the luxury of time or money to invest in further CPD.
I appreciate
especially
that.
People who work in schools.
But I do think there are people who we've talked about it before when we talked about training, but who kind of take their instructor's ethos as gospel and don't... And potentially don't broaden... their own, broadened into their own thing. And is that kind of like, I wouldn't hope that any of the kids turn out to be exactly like us. Like, the goal is not to make mini Gemmas and Lewises and to be like, oh, we have influenced the world. And it's, I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I think it's a thing of, because when you're training, my experience with the practitioners was that there wasn't a lot of like humility about their own practice and saying, oh, I'll tell you why, because I actually did this once and didn't go well, or, you know, and a bit like that, you know, we've said before, you put on that mask in state teaching, in state schools, you put on that mask of like, I am the teacher and I'm infallible and I'm all those things.
Yeah.
And you do, to an extent, have to put that on when you're an instructor in anything. But then if you don't carry on and do peer mentoring and go and see other forest schools, you can, I think some people walk away with that idea that, like, you know, their forest school teacher, oh, they must do perfect sessions all the time, and there's always whittling, and they always get the kids to sit down. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of this is just breaking down, being more open, I guess, as a community.
Yeah.
And not so much jumping on everybody who isn't doing what you think is forest school, and kind of going, because I think,
or even just, I was just thinking about even phone calls are somehow, that's that thing of social media, that anonymity and that brevity that you mentioned, that even people who are working by themselves, if it's too difficult to go and observe people, to kind of forge relationships where you have like a weekly or fortnightly phone call or or Skype, and just reflect to somebody else rather than just with yourself.
Someone that you don't have to keep putting context onto everything, and you know that they get a bit of it, and you don't have to keep explaining like, oh, and this is the thing that should be, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
And I mean, the other good thing about observation is that if it's done well, then people reflect back to you everything that you're doing, not just the bits that you're like, oh, that was a bit tricky, wasn't it? Or, oh, what do you think about that? Actually, it's like kind of running commentary of, I saw you do this, and I saw this happen, and I saw the children say this about this. And so you get all of the positives that you, as you say, might not have noticed, because you're so programmed to focus on the negative and the challenges, which require more thought and attention, that some lots of the things that you take for granted that you're that are happening in your sessions, when somebody is observing you well, they'll project that back to you, and you'll think, oh yeah, God, that is actually really good. And that is because of the way that I've set that session up, or the way that I interact with that group. And that's really beneficial. So basically what I'm saying is everyone should just like make really good friends with another forest school leader that lives around the road, that can come and observe you really well for free. Just loads, yeah. Loads of time. Yeah. Easy,
just,
right?
Just have more time.
Perfect. And that's yeah. how to not worry.
Well, I was thinking
things being perfect.
Sort of session by session, I guess, rather than it being long term. They're all sort of instances, and it kind of relates back to, you know, like you do it to your own experiences. And I had I was doing my music degree. I had a performance teacher who, he said the goal isn't ever like you need to accept that you're not going to play it perfectly.
Mm.
You know there isn't a perfect performance of this piece.
Yeah.
Your goal is to sit and to try and get, if they're data points on a spectrum, to try and move so that your cluster of data points is creeping closer and closer to that end.
And I
do think that about forest school sessions,
yeah.
is if you looked individually at any one session, I would go, right, you could argue that any of the sessions that I've run or that we've run, you could go, no, wasn't perfect because this wasn't perfect. But the goal isn't to be perfect. The goal is to, over a long time, keep it going and to move it up. And that might, in that same analogy, I'm thinking of it with a group. So it might be that your first session, in order to facilitate, it's going back to what we were talking to right at the start, to facilitate getting loads of data points by the end over here, is you go, actually, I've got to meet you where you are.
Mm.
If you're talking to, you know, meeting for a first time, a group of kids who are heavily reliant on like how school works, you know, let's say it's not the typical like, oh, they run off and they go crazy. Let's say it's the other end. It's the really flat, passive
need lots of,
you know,
reading,
just quiet and they sit there and let's say it's that group and you go, okay, well, I've got to go maybe super high energy or I've got to give you lots of structure to show you what how this all works.
Yeah.
And if that was the only observation someone came and did, this was used to annoy me about teaching, was they never asked you what it was in the context of, or, you know, like, oh, why have you put so and so there? They'd look at one snapshot. And if you look at the first snapshot of any of my school sessions, you'd go, he's not doing forest school.
Mm.
And I go, no, I'm going to get to forest school.
I
have to meet them here because that's where they are.
Yeah.
But you can't just go like, walk in. But I mean, you couldn't take one of our, you couldn't take any one of our groups and treat another group exactly the same and just be like, all right, this is what children who are 8 and I'm thinking of, we've got some very different groups of like 6 to 10 year olds, 6 to 12 year olds that happen in the week. And one group needs completely different things to the other group. And you can't just go like, well, a forest school teacher doesn't put things on a, you know, leaves an empty board and does a child led. Because you go, no, this group needs that.
Mm.
That group doesn't need that. Maybe that group won't need it eventually, but then maybe this, you know.
I really like that analogy of the music because you could apply that to lots of parts of our job, like storytelling, for example, which is so rich in opportunity and such a wonderful thing to do, but it's so terrifying. And the reason that you might not do it is because you have that fear of, oh my gosh, what if I forget a bit of it and it's got to be perfect? And, you know, I've got all these people looking at me expectantly, and actually, you know, the more you do it, you realise it's never perfect. And the thing that the stuff that your brain comes up with in the moment sometimes is fantastic. You know, suddenly you'll find yourself saying stuff. Okay, this has never happened in this story before, but it's getting a good bit of interaction from these guys over here, and I'm taking it. Taking cues from the group, and the more relaxed you become with it, the more that happens, and that's wonderful, and that's fantastic.
And stuff falls flat. Stuff that, you know, little lines that you go, oh, that got a laugh next time.
Yeah.
I reckon up, oh, no one's gone for it. Okay, we're just...
I really like that thing of, like, there isn't one way to do it, and I used to find music terrifying, and I think if I'd had a music teacher like yours, young, you know, I used to play the trumpet, and I'd love watching kind of orchestral pieces or group pieces or brass bands and stuff. Absolutely too terrified to ever put myself out there and join any of them because I was so terrified of getting it wrong and all eyes kind of looking at me. That could be...
Well, it relates back to as well, doesn't it? It's that story of the two pottery classes, isn't it? We've talked about this before. The one group of students are told they have 3 months to make a pot,
mm-hmm.
and the other group are told you've got 3 months to make as many pots as you can.
Right.
And so one group spends hours making and working on this one pot
mm-hmm.
that is okay,
mm-hmm.
and the other class have got, you know, 300 pots in their belts.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, yeah. they've got 300 data points. So rather than going, oh, I'm going to put all my hopes on this one, and oh, actually it sits right in the middle of the spectrum, they go, oh, right, oh, I've learned from that one, I've learned from that one, I've learned from that one, and they're all little drops forward that you go, okay, just keep ticking it forwards. And
I think
that's, it's quite freeing, like you say, for lots of things. Like, this is possibly why I am more gung-ho to do things than, because you have a little bit more, I don't know if you would, you have a little bit more like, oh, this might, it might not be okay. And I'm looking at it going, no, I need to get the shit ones out of the way. Like, I don't care about these. I need to do the shit ones.
Yeah.
And like, I know in 3 years time I'll be doing this well, but I'm quite happy that like that one's going to be 25% good and that one's good. I'm not aiming for 25%, but you know what I mean?
You're aiming for success. But
I'm doing a lot of pots.
Without fear of failure,
Sure, I think that's kind of, there's enough analogies there at the end that we could just leave that for people to mull over.
Yeah.
How many more do you think we'll do before Christmas? Two more?
Maybe
two
We're
more.
Lucky.
We've still got spaces after Christmas to come and do a whole day of outdoor cooking.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really exciting. And yeah, I think if you've got any topics, we were thinking about starting doing some sort of book reviews, picking a book ahead of time so we can let you guys know what the book is.
Yeah.
And then saying, right, at the end of the month, we're going to do a little review. You don't have to have read the book. We'll kind of summarise some bits. But if you want to join in and feel more involved in what we're doing. So if you've got any books that you go, oh, that is the one, I'd really love to hear what they think about that book. Send us free books. Right, bye.
Bye.